And it's really all about how creative you are. And that's why we, Kate and me, were super big on stressing the importance of soft skills in data science, right? Communication ability, resilience, creative thinking, being able to also work together with different disciplines to come to a successful outcome in the field. That part, that is something that you really also have to work on as a data scientist. And then you don't have to worry about the next big technology coming. You don't have to worry about the next Python package or GitHub Copilot being even better now in the future, because as long as you have those soft skills, you always going to have, I think, big and very cool job opportunities.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Daten-Business-Podcast-Episode. I'm starting in German, but now we are into English for the first time. Welcoming today, Jasmin and Kate. Hello.
Hello. Hi, guys.
Great that you two are joining us from BASF. And there is a reason why we speak in English. That's mostly due to Kate. You're currently in Brazil. São Paulo.
Yes.
But usually you are where situated?
In Germany, in Stuttgart.
Stuttgart. And Jasmin is living in Mannheim, right?
Exactly. Close to Mannheim.
Close to Mannheim. You both did a master's in data science, and you're doing data science at BASF. Mm-hmm. We want to learn more about that. And you have your own podcast, Diaries of a Data Scientist. Is this inspired by this other podcast that has the name Diaries of a CEO, I assume?
Very interesting that you say that, because people have been asking us about that as well. But honestly, I only figured out after we started our podcast that there's this nice one with the Diaries of a CEO. No, we really did try, I think, different titles. And we felt that this was representing our content the best. And and also, so it was more by coincidence.
Okay. And it was also a little bit kind of rooted to the reality that it's diarist of an expert working as a data scientist in a data science field. And this is not just kind of topics that we're taking from different kind of fields in order to discuss, but this is actually diaries kind of represent your daily activities, what you will write in your diary in the end of the day. And this is pretty much how it is kind of matches for me.
Okay. You don't publish every day, but still more than 20 episodes now for a year, right? So roughly one can say, let's say two per month, roughly, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And the topics you cover are really broad. Of course, I was listening into it. And just before our conversation today, I was in a traffic jam, had extra time to listen in again. And you have topics ranging from imposter syndrome in tech to the current topics in Gen AI, the hype around it. Open source, what's it all about? How can you make money with it? Why it's very, very useful, important for businesses and all of us? What are the benefits, etc.? And you are giving data scientists advice how to plan their careers, how to think about data science in many ways, career-wise, topic-wise, obviously, and very broad. So very much a shout out to everyone interested or already into data science. Giving it a listen, Diaries of a Data Scientist will be linked in the show notes. Yes, and we will talk about that, but not only about that. There are so many more topics, I'm sure. And let's start with you guys. So what are you up to? Where are you coming from, basically? What have you done in the past, right? So learning a bit more about you. Let's start with you, Jasmin.
All right. Yeah, first, thank you for this shout out. I felt like this was an amazing summary of the content and also the diversity of the content that we're trying to publish. It's amazing. And I feel like that's what really also brought Kate and me together, that we have quite similar views on the job of a data scientist, which is going way beyond just, you know, programming in Python or R and just doing your stuff there. It's also like the amount of soft skills that you actually need to be successful and you know, also like that we felt there's a lack of resources around career planning and career starters. That's something that we wanted to supply. And so from my side, I actually did not start in data science. So I'm more coming from the traditional computer science, software engineering world. And I also have a bachelor basically in business information tech. So sprinkled in also a certain amount of business administration. but I felt pretty soon that I was actually wanting to stay on the technology side. Mm-hmm. I was also working throughout my whole bachelor's. Since I did it in that dual study system we have here in Germany together with SAP, also loved the time, and I could not imagine, you know, not working for my master's. So I also did my master's while actually working 20 hours a week at SAP still. And in the end, I decided to join the customer side, and I went to the chemical industry, to BASF, because I felt there's a lot of potential of bringing in more data science there and, you know, really shaping, helping to shape the future of AI at BASF, and still love doing it. So right now it's my, I think, 3.5 years of BASF.
Okay. And it's one of the very big companies around, right? In Mannheim and so, or Ludwigshafen and all this area. So it is on the list anyways, but I guess you applied various places, but somehow you ended up at BASF then.
Yeah, actually not. So two things. I did not have it on my radar at all at a possible employer for me, honestly, because as a, like, I was already working as a data scientist back then, with SAP, and was really about getting into computer vision because it was fascinating me throughout my master's, and I wanted to write my thesis in that field. And this was something that I couldn't really do at SAP. It's just not a field getting into computer vision, right? And I was actively looking into internships to be able to get into computer vision. And that's when BASF popped up suddenly. And I was so surprised to see it that they did anything in computer vision. I did not have them on my list at all. I'm going to be very brutally honest there. And that's actually something that I would love to change, that people start getting more aware about also what the industry has in terms of opportunities in data science. And I did the internship in the end with BASF, working on really cool drone imaging data. And that's what actually what in the end also shaped my decision to wanting to go there after finishing my master's.
Okay. So in the end, they did a good job, great job. But overall, you would say, no, they could improve, because in this area, they should be so visible in terms of, employer branding, let's say, or, you know, having these talents join because they know, wow, cool jobs, great topics, etc. Right?
I think that it's really about like the awareness and the transparency, because there's a lot of things there, a lot of great opportunities. But I feel like with the more, you know, conservative and traditional industry, it's not just BASF, it's many different companies as well. And they're maybe not just as used to also making people aware about that part of the business, you know, about the data science, the technology part of the business, which is very different. I mean, in if you ask anyone graduating from biology, chemistry, molecular, something, they all have BASF on their top priorities, right? But in computer science or data science or statistics, probably not.
But it's changing, it seems, right? That's
absolutely. And I think Kate and me were doing our fair share.
and
trying to do
this is what I was about to say. Yes, definitely.
Okay. Gotcha. And some things, facts that we cannot see on LinkedIn easily. So what are you doing when not thinking or doing data science?
Oh, wow. that's a really good question. I think data science is a huge part of my life. But maybe a little bit more of a fun fact. I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. So just recently this year, I was so grateful to be able to visit her concert in Hamburg. So travel to the nice Hamburg and visiting her concert. And actually Taylor Swift brought me to when I was 15 years old, you know, super, super cliche. I learned guitar via YouTube videos because I just wanted to be able to play along and cover some of her songs. So I'm actually pretty big into music. I play several instruments, and I think maybe if I wouldn't have moved into computer science or data science, I would have done something more, even more creative in terms of, I don't know, acting or like into music or something like that. And I do love to dance. So I was professionally dancing hip hop and street dance. So I'm actually quite into the creative and sport side.
And but you didn't stop. Still part of
No. Okay. No, so nowadays,
it's my hobby.
And that's, I hope nobody is feeling like now embarrassed, because I sometimes do bring Zumba into my workplace in the terms that, you know, Zumba is a special kind of sport. because it's a mixture of, say, Arabic and Latin music. And there were cases when we had a workshop that I was asked to do a quick 5-minute Zumba dance with the workshop participants, you know, after lunch to get them ready again. And so some of my colleagues had to suffer.
Okay. Okay. Too strict. You're too serious about it.
That is nice.
Okay. Sounds good. And how about you, Kate? So what, like the path towards data science? It's always very interesting for the listeners to hear the personal stories behind it.
Yeah, I'm definitely. I'm kind of right now looking it down because I'm trying to remember this path and what can I definitely start with is that I would always say that my parents kind of contributed to this path definitely because when I was, I guess, 6 or 7 years old, they put me into mathematical physical lyceum. It was a like really, really interesting kind of school in Russia. And I was born in a very, very small, small city in the middle of Russia, in the middle of like snows. One of the temperatures like minus 40, et cetera. And pretty much, yeah, in there, by the way, I want to say just really fun fact about this part. Even though that I was in mathematical and physical school, I hated math to death. I couldn't state it. I was not able to understand what to do with this. And I was so, so much bored on the lessons in there. And I was like that close to be expelled from that school. And that, but pretty much, yeah, pretty much that everything started to be totally kind of reshaping. And that I got to the universities in St. Petersburg, and it was in Russia, and I was on the mathematical specialization. And this was kind of the year when I fell in love in math. Thanks to my professor and to my tutor. They were just really, really brilliant teachers in that time, times. And after 1 year, I was like, okay, that is really simple. That is very much easy. I got bored. I want to do something else. And this is how I got to the French university. It's the name of that is Grenoble Alpes. And it was located right next to the Alpes, was with a pretty, pretty beautiful view. And it was a technical university where I started statistics. And pretty much I finished both of that educations in Russia and France. And right immediately after graduating my bachelor's, I was like, okay, let's do something else. And a dream of mine was always, I would say, go to PhDs and maybe become a doctor and doing like becoming a professor later in the universities. And that is why for me it was not even a question, should I do the master's or not? And the reason why I decided to go to Germany was pretty much due to my huge background of my family, because pretty much all of our generations were born in Germany. And also like only my great-grandma, she decided to move from Germany to Russia back in the days. So pretty much I moved back to Germany to my roots, starting getting new culture. I'm fascinated with Germany, by the way. And I started doing my first master in applied statistics. It was in the University of Trier. And you can imagine what happened next. Pretty much after 1 year, I was like, let's do something else. I'm getting bored again. And this is how I started doing the second master in the same university in the same city in the data science major. And at the same time, I was pretty much already working in BSF as a data scientist and a working student in R&D department with really loved, like, and beloved colleagues still nowadays. So this is pretty much what brought me in there. And I guess the key part for me, why I'm so much fascinated with data science, and I'm pretty much talking here and there about this topic and about machine learning and et cetera, it's because I very much hated this at school. And I had no clue where these numbers can be applied. And today I can actually see how you can change the world, how simple math and simple statistics can be composed into something really harsh, enormous, and really hard to understand for a lot of people, even for me sometimes. And that you can even put that, you can create products, you can create, I don't know, pills, you can treat cancer. And that is really amazing.
So powerful, yes. And so you actually went from hating to loving math. And that was mostly due to professors, mentors, tutors, right? That's what you just said.
Yes, in the universities,
that
yes.
Gives us like this extra explanation why this is important to you and also important to you, Yasmin, right? Both of you are mentors in this, how is it called? GDEXA or the CITIS program? Yes. Maybe you can also tell us a bit about it, like why and what's behind it, because this is, it fits perfectly what you just said, the importance of mentoring, mentorship. Yasmin, maybe this.
Maybe I get started. Because I'm actually involved with the nice guys from GDX since 2019. So it has been a while. So while I was still actually
with this, right back then.
Sorry, come again. Was
when they just started out with this 2019.
Yes, exactly. So
kind of one of the early one, if not the earliest mentors there.
Yes. So they basically just got started, and then I had a really nice meeting with one of their founders, with Ekrem. Actually doing work. He was at that time at Microsoft. I was working at SAP, and there was like a partner event going on, and we sat together by lunch, and like with a total Ekrem style, he asked like, "What are you like interested in outside of work?" And I was actually mentioning that I really, really always loved working also with other students. And especially I was at my master at that time, like working with younger students and helping them, you know, answer questions. Because I'm actually not coming from a family who, like, my parents did not study. So they didn't get higher education. So I was actually the first in my family to do the A-levels, the Abitur, and then also going to university. And I felt like I had literally no one to talk to about how is that like. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I can give something back there. And then Ekrem told me about this thing that he's building up, where he's offering mentoring opportunities to talents around the world for free. And basically asked if I wanted to be their student's advisor. So I did that. I was helping him to get this kind of perspective. And then at some point he was like, I feel you would be a great mentor as well. Don't you want to get into it? And that's how I started then back still in 2019, being a mentor in the data science area. And I was very happy that actually since then I did evangelize some more colleagues also at BSF to join being mentors. And I think that's also something that I brought to Kate where we early on when we met. And I felt whenever I see someone, I meet someone who also has a super, super nice perspective to bring in. And I feel like there's maybe some opportunity for mentorship. I try to evangelize more people.
Awesome. Really fired up. And this is kind of evangelism par excellence that you bring in there, right? And Kate, you then joined as well. And now you're mentoring.
Yes. Definitely. Since 2023 April, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Roughly how much time is that per week? Roughly, like, is it 3 hours per week thing or... Very much in like waves. Sometimes there's more to do and sometimes not so much.
Yeah, I guess for me, it very much depends because there you can also say, I would love just to have 3 mentees. And you always have a process with the mentee. So it is not something that you're going to meet every single day because not the mentoring path is that you have a goal and that you reach the goal gradually, maybe in the time frame of 6 months. And pretty much you kind of decide to put this time frame periods in there. So if you would say, for example, I would love to have 3 mentees, that probably is going to be 3 hours per month. This is what we're talking about. If you want a 10, of course, it's going to be 10 hours.
Okay. So regular calls, but not like on a weekly basis and not always one-on-one calls, but can be one too many.
And I think... One thing to appreciate, right, is that I think all of the mentors who are active there, they are doing it in their voluntarily in their free time. And many of the mentees, they fully understand that, right? And so I think there's a very big flexibility to also, I had also many calls Saturday mornings or depending on the time shifts because it really is a global mentorship, right? Like sometimes at odd times, like, I don't know, in the evenings when I just felt like, oh, right now is also a good time. And there's really nice interaction going on. So you can also say, hey, there's something coming on with a project deadline. Can we shift? So I think there's also really a lot of flexibility, which is also necessary to make that work while working full time and also quite demanding jobs. There are some peaks. I think there are also still running really nice collaborations with certain universities where you're done in this more structured program. And that is certainly a little bit more of a peak time. But at some point also from my side, I actually saw myself more in spreading the word around GDXA as well, instead of, you know, only taking up maybe 1 or 2 mentees, which would have been like the maximum of my capacity. And that was actually the time where Kate and me kind of in parallel started thinking, how can we make our content more accessible? And the kind of questions that we kept, that we saw, they were recurring from different mentees. And we felt there needs to be something which we can also put out into the world to, you know, already catch some of these recurring questions in order then to focus on the more individual things that just take more time.
So that was kind of a piece of the puzzle starting the podcast, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
So, maybe from my side, kind of a little bit additionally to this point, is that important, I guess, to understand here that at that time before the podcast, we were already working as like in BSF, which is a very global company. And we've been working with a lot of countries, not only with Germany. We had, I don't know, like United States, Brazil, Singapore, Hong Kong, you can name them. And additionally to this point, we were also doing mentorships in GDXA. And in there, you could also have mentees from US, from Singapore, from India, and et cetera. And I guess it was the point when we decided, okay, we're kind of working with plus 20 countries on the weekly basis, and we still have the same questions, and we're a little bit perhaps repeating ourselves. And we do understand from the very global perspective that the points and the struggles are kind of the same with like a little bit different maybe shadows and contents in there. And that was one of the prerequisites why we decided to get ourselves into the world of podcasts.
Okay. Okay. Let's talk about that in detail furthermore then. But to finish some things up, Kate, you're now in Brazil. And in one of your podcast episodes, I guess it was the latest one, right? You mentioned it was part of your contract, right? Is that something that was, is this pushed towards you, or this was something you wanted to have in the contract?
I'm a soul traveler. It is something that I want to have. And I will not, you know, I will not get and be fine with that unless I will be in every single country of this beautiful world and get to work with pretty much every single nationality. We have only 197, I guess. So 30% of them are covered. So we have 60 left. That is why I really wanted to have it, and therefore it was part of my contract. And for me, it's, I can totally say that for me, it's not a job. It's not a work. It's, that's the greatest hobby ever that I have, being in Brazil doing data science. That's amazing.
Okay. So it was part of the negotiation that you wanted it to be part of the contract that you can travel.
It was actually part of the program. So it was not like I got into the interviews and I would say, okay, I wanted to travel. It was. I'm not joining if it's not part of the contract, but actually it was already from BSF given to you. And there we're just looking for the person that will be fitting this terms and conditions in there. And it was also really important to say that it was not stated in the contract that I have to go to Brazil. It was kind of worldwide. You can go wherever you would love to based on your preferences, your interests, and your project. And in Brazil, it just happened to have everything that I wanted.
Okay.
Project-wise, location-wise.
Weather-wise.
Weather-wise, yes.
Nice to have, yes. And now you're there for 6 months.
For six months, yes.
Yeah, for 6 months, okay. Yeah, so you need to be in a big company, corporate, or you are a digital nomad as a freelancer. Those two extremes probably, there's nothing in between if you want to combine traveling and usually, right? That's you need to have. Set up or the other one. Interesting. And it's not that Yasmin is your boss, or because Yasmin has a lead title position and you, let's say, a normal so far data science.
Data scientist, yes.
Yes, data science.
No, exactly. Okay. So I think we actually met each other when Kate was at the end of her master's and about to finish her working studentship with BSF. And that's when we got to know each other. And we pretty soon like recognized, right, this is not a mentor-mentee relationship or something, because we were just, you know, on the same wavelength. And also we are like pretty close in age, and we just kept in touch. And Kate is doing this traineeship with one of our divisions at BSF coding.
Yes.
And I'm with the central IT. So I'm having this more maybe traditional route of being started as a data scientist. And then since Since 2022, I've took on the team lead position, led the data science team, and now I'm fully focusing on the topic of AI enablement at BSF and leading our internal data and AI academy, which is a super nice blend of people business, data business, like also to refer to your name, and also educating. So basically mentoring BSF on the topic of data science is my daily bread, if you want to call it.
And honestly, I'm really happy that. I'm just wanted to say that I'm really, really happy that back in this in the days, I don't know, 3 years ago, we did not end up being in this official relationships in the BSF.
Could have happened, And to understand this better, Yasmin, you are, let's say, walking around, but you are, have to talk to many, right? Otherwise, how to enable them towards AI, right? So can you give us some... some details, some understanding. What's your daily job actually?
Oh, that's a really good question. I feel like in the last 18 months, when we really started building up our data and AI Academy, I was a little bit of everything. Like I was the instructor. I was the curriculum owner and shaping our, say, curriculum. I was the evangelist, and I was very lucky to have a lot of support from many colleagues from the expert, from the AI expert community, who also did several trainings and sessions and so on. But at the time, we really, when we started out, we did not have full-time resources on the topic. So I was actually leading the team, which is doing data science projects and tried to build up the topic of the data and AI Academy on the side and get more resources for it because I saw a lot of potential and the impact. And I think now we're in the state where I'm actually focusing full time on the academy. We had several open positions, which are now also almost completely filled. And we're really building up the topic as a strong internal team. And due to also being super active, I think, in the last 18 months. So last year, the Data and Academy had, I think, over 120 presentations across BSF. And we also learned pretty quickly, as you said, right? If you're always talking one-on-one, you can only do so much. So at some point, we also said, at least for these bigger sessions, we have to have at least, I don't know, 50, 80, 100 people in the audience in order to really say, okay, we can plan it in. We still have one-on-ones, but then mostly on leadership level, because there you also have the impact through through the organization, right? But for bigger sessions, at some point we said we can't come to every individual team and try to consolidate going to the town halls, going to the already set communications and cascades. And so I think already last year, without having actually a full standing team behind it, we had over 17,000 peoples in touch with our content, which was amazing. And obviously aiming for way more this year.
And only internally within BSF, right?
Yes, so mostly internally. We did also have a couple of, say, external sessions where we also talk about the topic of AI enablement, the importance, right? But just getting started last year and this year. But as that's part of the journey.
Yeah, because there's so many different questions, needs, and also people are afraid sometimes of the effects and changes, etc. So to address all of them is really tough, right?
Yeah, and especially at a company like BSF, like many other industry companies, right? You have a very different picture, like compared to a tech space where everyone is anyway all about digital and you know, agile working and so on. And IT is a big part of BSF, but we have a way bigger part in production and R&D and so on, right? And there's very different communities. But I've been amazed, honestly, how fast people have been picking up the topic of, for example, also generative AI at BSF. There was a lot of, actually, we had way more pull last year than push. So way more people demanded that we come to them, that we talk about generative AI to them. So that was really, I mean, helping us a lot with now also growing this team. And that was really, honestly, still surprising to me how fast people picked that up and what were interested. And that's what I really, really loved about last year. And but as you said, I like to be super realistic. So I'm a big fan of AI, obviously, but I also want to really be listening to people's concern because many concerns are really valid, and you have to also seriously address them and talk to talk to people about them, right? It's not helping to just say AI is this big problem solving and solving all of your business problems. No, you also, you have to do something for it, right? You have to have a good data organization, for example. There's nothing such as free lunch. And we also have to do it in a way that is aligned with BSF values and ethical values as well.
Okay, so not only teaching data science AI, but very much beyond it, let's say building trust into AI methods, let's say, and et cetera. Okay, and how can we imagine this to be in reality? Is it full of video courses, or so how do I get the content mixture? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's a very nice question. So I think we started, as you can imagine, the basis was a lot of on-demand learning, so self-organized learning, as we call it, especially like video courses, reading resources that you could see. But also we have an internal podcast at BSF that we were leveraging to get the content and the message out. But we saw pretty soon, people like to talk to people. So even if we had a lot of, self-organized learning material, which is capturing a lot of the content, people said, no, but we want you to come to our team, or we want you to be presenting that at our town hall, right? And so we started with these kind of sessions last year, and I called the number out earlier. So we did a lot of them. And what we also started is a mentoring approach. Mm-hmm. So we basically brought it into BSF as well. There's other mentorings, programs around for career, for soft skills. But what I felt what was not there at the time was really like a mentoring on technology topics, on data science and AI specifically. So we started with a kind of one-on-one coaching that was matching experts like Kate with someone from the business side who wanted to learn about it. And again, here at some point, the demand was rolling in. It was just getting higher than what we could offer. And we resorted to group coachings. We still do exclusive mentoring, but then mostly like on leadership level. So that's the second pillar. And the third pillar, what we call social learning, is big formats like hackathons, data science competitions, a rally, or also our virtual conference on the topic of AI.
Okay. And Kate was already mentioning BSF Coatings, and we know them very well because they're in Münster. They also access or are part of this academy, for instance, or not?
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I guess Data and AI Academy is for BSF, for all companies within
Spanning
the BSF.
Whole company.
Yes, so definitely.
We have people joining and asking questions from the whole
across
BASF ecosystem.
Exactly. Okay. It's a global academy, but and that's very also necessary. We are working together with all of the different divisions, because there are also other academies at BSF and other teams that are looking into digitalization, but also like in total talent and employee development and learning initiatives. And with all of them, we're working together. So it's more of this kind of federated system where we as Global Academy are working together with the different offers also in the divisions to specialize and to customize that. It wouldn't be possible to just do it from a central point, because for that the divisions and the needs of the businesses are just too different, honestly. So we're very happy that we're in this kind of ecosystem, but on all things data analytics and AI, which is like this more global general matter, we are kind of the landing page or the landing point.
That's true.
Otherwise, I mean, these impressive numbers you couldn't achieve otherwise, right? So you really need this impact, this visibility within whole BSF, the number was like 17,000, or what was that?
Yeah, exactly. So there was a kind of, if you want to call it, I think impressions would probably be the best number for it. It's a different mixture of people visiting sessions, but also views and clicks on the content, on the videos and things like that. So everything mixed in, right? So definitely like a measure, also, you know, being able to measure. It's a big topic in also just educations, right? And it's always super, super tough topic. How do you measure the impact? Because there's quantitative ways to measure how many people visited the session. But what you actually want to get into is the qualitative stuff, right? How much do actually people take out of your session and now apply it into their business? And that's always super, super hard to measure. So we're also, that's something we're looking at. How can we improve our ways of, you know, KPIs and measuring it? I mean, I'm a data scientist, you know, who would I be if I would not be relying on data to run our academy?
Yes. And you are talking about careers indeed. Mm-hmm. So how do you personally, how are you incentivized? What are the metrics you are measured on, Yasmin, when talking about this? Is it this? How many are using it? Or what's the feedback? Or what is it there? So that you can say, okay, that was great, or that was something is good, but still to be improved.
Yeah. Oh, that's honestly really, really tough to answer because, as mentioned, the numbers are only getting you so far. So they can probably say how big your audience was or how many clicks are there. But I think it's also overall the, as you said earlier, how much trust do people have in the topic of AI, and how visible is it in a company that is more in the working as an industrial company, right? So I think it's also this overall organizational feeling and what people talk about in the coffee corners that you actually would have to capture in order to say, hey, this is really visible or not, and this is fulfilling its purpose or not. And for us, I think the nicest feedback is, so sometimes when we're doing sessions, we ask people, how did you learn about the data in the iAcademy, right? So it's like, you know, running a company and asking, did you learn about us on Google search, on Instagram or something like that? And that's something that we also do internally. And for me, it's always also nice to hear word of mouth as one of the major channels that people just recommend the offers and the material to each other. So that's basically the NPS identified in terms of word of mouth. And that's just really nice to hear that people like the offers and the resources and the contact to the trainer so much that they also wanted to recommend it to colleagues.
Okay, got it. So it's definitely motivating to hear all these nice voices and get this feedback. At the same time, I assume it's sometimes tough to say, okay, there are these thresholds, I need to like succeed with this, and then maybe another promotion, maybe another step in my career. That's from my outside view could be
but
question, right?
I don't know. So for me, Bernard, it was like, I think 10 years ago I was so roughly out of my A levels, right? I can say that. So I had a very different view on what a career could look like and how much you can plan it. So when I came out of my A-levels, I had a super concrete plan. I'm going to do my dual study with SAP and going to make it super successful. And then I want to get my master's, and probably then I'm going to get my PhD. So I kind of had the next 8-9 years planned out. And in the end, yes, I did my bachelor's, I did my master's, both were super successful. But for example, I felt during my thesis, my master thesis, it's not the right point in time for me to get a PhD. And I was way more excited about actually joining more full time and getting into the career than now doing the PhD at the time. So it was already like diverging from my 10 years plan, if you want to call it that. And having met so many amazing people in both BSF, but also SAP, I felt like one thing that they always, and they shared that and had that in common. Many people said careers are not linear, and if you're like too stuck on this one view of your career, you might miss out on a lot of opportunities along the way. And that really helped me a lot to get more relaxed about this topic. And I would say, yes, I have a pretty good view on where I maybe want to be in the next 2, 2.5, or 3 years. But I'm not doing this 5 to 10 years planning anymore like that.
All right. It's kind of the best optimization has some randomness in it, right? We know this as data scientists, right?
Yeah. It's a matter of say exploit and explore.
Indeed. Other words for this, yes. And nowadays, you're not so much hands-on, right? If we understand this correctly, what you're doing, the very impactful work, not so much into coding. You still need to be, I guess, up to date, right? So you need to understand what's going on. But it's not on a daily basis. You're not coding and deploying data science stuff.
I'm always saying, like, you know, Kate is my string to still be like a data scientist, because she's keeping me grounded on the pure tech stuff and being like an expert there. So that was also something that I definitely was a transition for me in the beginning, moving away from being a sole data scientist into this team lead position. Definitely comes with the trade-off, as you said, of not being as hands-on anymore. At the beginning, I also very actively tried to keep that up with projects I did on the side and on my weekends. And honestly, this was super exhausting for me to try to be both at the same time. And at some point, I also noticed I don't have to do it. I can also now focus on being the team lead and also enjoy that. And I, after now 2.5 years, I have to say, I still feel super much embedded and attached to the AI expert community. I still read a lot of code on my daily basis, but I'm not doing it actively anymore. And also, I mean, with everything's going on in how actually programming and data science itself as a craftsmanship is shaping and being different, for example, just with GitHub Copilot, right? I also wonder, do we still need that as a data scientist in the next five years? Do we still need to actively code the same way that we're doing it right now? And that, for me personally, I feel like a little bit more relaxed now about that, because I feel understanding the broader concepts of computer science and AI, it's still obviously there, right? And I feel like that's something that is sticking with you no matter if you're actively programming or not. So I feel actually more relaxed. So for me, AI in that area, and this might be very different if you're like a software developer just doing JavaScript the whole day, right? You might be actually more concerned about how your job is going to change. But for me, I feel for me, it was more relaxing to see the development in that area.
On a high abstraction level, and then you can materialize with the help of a machine, whatever you have in your head, be it data science or something
else. And it's really all about of how creative you are. And that's why we, Kate and me, were super big on stressing the importance of soft skills in data science, right? Communication ability, resilience, creative thinking, being able to also work together with different disciplines to come to a successful outcome in the field. That part, that is something that you really also have to work on as a data scientist. And then you don't have to worry about the next big technology coming. You don't have to worry about the next Python package or GitHub Copilot being even better now in the future, because as long as you have those soft skills, you're always going to have, I think, big and very cool job opportunities.
Got it.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I guess,
enjoying the hands-on part, right? That is your, in contrast, like your main job is really being hands-on.
Yeah, that is true. So I can definitely say that Yasmir, for me, here is, let's say, a role model in the sense is if I want to step out of the technical field, what are the trade-offs I have to take? Because at some point in your career as a developer, you have to take a choice. Either you want to go to the senior positions or you want to go to the team lead positions. And here with the second one, I have definitely a lot of struggles because this is something what I'm really enjoying, and this is something what I'm extremely afraid to lose, because the programming language, it is not something as you would learn it as an English and that you can easily communicate on that later. It's always a skill. It's always a lot of struggles, a lot of error codes, a lot of frustration, and et cetera. And you have to be in this kind of bubble in order to feel, let's say, yourself a little bit confident or equipped for the next projects. But so I kind of started as a 100% tech person, but then over the time, I also converted into many more things. And honestly, right now, I'm not even sure if I want to go back to 100 being tech, because you would have a lot of opportunities just bringing up the technology to the people. And I can definitely see the second wave, which is happening right now in the data science community, which is even for tech departments, business is looking for techy people who are able to talk and who are able to bring up these enablement processes and who are able to create this and increase this trust into the business side. Because, I mean, what is the reason of creating AI technologies for business if nobody is using that, right? And this is a huge, huge part of this process. And I feel right now it is much more valuable not only be and consider yourself as a just 100% techie person, but also be on the other side of this threshold and be a little bit more closer to the people and to the business side nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a lot about communication. We already talked about this. And then translating between, let's say, business and tech, but there's many more, obviously, between. And that is definitely part of your job as well, Kate.
Yeah, of course. So for me, it is, as I mentioned previously, for me, it is really important to still have some percent as my project. Maybe sometimes I can be very hands-on and leading the projects. Sometimes I can be as a tech lead, because I would love just to see the kind of the structures and being communicating with the business people in out there on the other side. And also I'm very much enjoying being a mentor, so teaching people. And you also have this really nice opportunity that you got a lot of networking and you got yourself placed by yourself sort of into much more interesting projects, perhaps even outside of your field, and that you can create different communities with the other data scientists. Right now, we're probably going to have a data science breakfast in Brazil, for example. And I'm also very much interested, you know, of what is happening in the universities, because as a data scientist, you don't want to get, you know, kind of narrow down into the one field. And you also want to see and explore what is out there in the research side, what they're doing and how they can equip you in the projects and solving different business problems. So it is everything little by little, I would say.
Yes, I've read that LinkedIn post that you're looking for partnerships and contacts.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, universities. And at the same time, I was a bit surprised that you emphasized universities, right? Is this anyways part of your job that you have to look into research?
No, it's not part of my job. It's part of my personal interest. Okay. Because also
again,
part of my...
repeating pattern here, right? You always run the extra mile. You too.
Definitely. I love it. It is my hobby, right? I came to Brazil also with one of the major points for myself to understand how was data science applied in Brazil, and also with the point to also convey that to our beloved listeners and viewers, because this is not... You know, one had every single day opportunity to see what is happening in a totally different continent, get to know this from the local side, not from the news or like, I don't know, anything else, but actually being involved and working with them hand by hand.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yes.
Okay. And we will listen into this now in your podcast so that you will cover up some of these research topics and collaborations. Okay. Interesting. And can you give us one concrete task that you're working on, or that you were working on in the past, like one thing where we can understand, okay, that was something Kate had to focus on?
Yeah, definitely. With the one note that I'm not allowed to go into this task deep into details, because all of them were classified. And I remember we had a really, really interesting research task. If you imagine you have the detergents that you're washing your white blouses with, right? And perhaps you've never thought about that. And perhaps a lot of people never read it. But if you have the recommendation on the pocket, you would be having something that it's better to wash with this type of water hardness. It's better to be, I don't know, to wash it under this certain degrees and under this certain temperature. This is not because it is in there just out of no reason, but this is actually because it was identified by using the machine learning. And that was really super interesting, because usually you would perceive of a data science to have connection more with the IT, more with the personal data as marketing, sales, activities on the internet, and et cetera. But actually, it's applied worldwide. And this is the most fascinating part about that. And you can apply data science and optimize the chemical structures and the chemical formulas of the detergent by applying machine learning in there. I have a lot of friends that, for example, were applying machine learning in the field of time series analysis in order to put different functions into the washing machines in there in order to optimize the washing process. Can you just believe that? I do have the good ones right now. So that was one of the really, really cool projects that we did. And perhaps also I can talk about a different one that was really connected to the computer vision. And we had to identify different particles on the surfaces of different chemical liquids. And mm-hmm. that was also pretty interesting. So mm-hmm. that is in a nutshell.
And
Nessie here, it definitely benefits from like knowing a little bit about chemistry.
That is
definitely like something that is super interesting. So, and that's why also many people from the AI expert community, they are not coming from the, say, straightforward math mm-hmm. or statistics or computer science background, but we have biologists in there, bioinformatics, astrophysicists, a lot of actual physicists and super, super diverse backgrounds, and all of them mm-hmm. find a niche in BSF. So it's a very, very diverse playing field in terms of data, but also mm-hmm. applications of data science. And that is, I think, for me, one major advantage of like the industry as an employer, mm-hmm. that you have way more diverse, say, data and, say, application opportunities than maybe like in a pure software or tech company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And right now I can definitely say that everything is all about LLMs and ChatGPT and how to implement that wonderful technologies in our daily basis.
Okay. So there's really this hype within as well. So we all talk about Gen AI and obviously you too.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah. So from many round tables and exchanges that we have, which are super important, it's along the same lines.
Yeah, and also because a couple of years ago, we thought that it can be only applied for NLP tasks, which is natural language preprocessing, right? But today in the research field, and that is why I really love research activities, we can definitely already say that these technologies can be applied for functions and just data that you can do regressions or classifications. And I think it is a huge step for the next generations and for the future for us.
Right. And the folks want to know so much about it. So that's why the Academy is exploding, right? So,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. So many use cases, so many things to learn and to accept that they are happening, mm-hmm. right? You have to accept things are changing now a lot. And there Absolutely. Are like on a weekly basis, new models popping up, and it's a tough job to inform and to use all this stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why actually like we're also pretty much restructuring and really setting up the team with different disciplines and roles. So as mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, right, I felt like I was all of these different roles at one time. And now I was in the lucky position to be able to really build up a whole team around that and spread out the responsibilities. So for example, we're also going to have a curriculum owner moving forward whose full-time job is to really manage the overall portfolio of different, learning formats that I mentioned earlier, but also, you can imagine we have different audiences to serve. We're also wanting to do something cool for our experts, but that's looking naturally very different than what we're doing for the normal employee who is just starting out and needs to understand what even is AI and why do I still need data for AI, for example, right? So we have very different target audience also to serve.
Okay. In terms of our podcast, mm-hmm. I think we understand the motivation behind it, right? Many things you mentioned, they really actually, there's a natural extension towards doing a podcast, right? Do we miss something here? Because it seems so logical for you guys. Okay, you met each other. You share the passion. Okay, so let's do a podcast, right? Or do we miss something here? Mm. Yasmin, okay.
You know, we just want to talk. You know, we just like talking. Wait,
I guess so, yes.
I don't click on record.
No, so that is one thing where Kate and me match also so well. We're actually really actively slowing down right now because we are super fast talkers, and I think there was an actual discussion around that when we met and when we said, hey, we want to start something together. There were other alternatives like, should we do something on TikTok? Should we do something on Instagram, right? And then it was more like, it's, you know, you have to edit pictures so much. And let's just talk. Let's do a podcast.
Yeah. And maybe the second part, which is pretty interesting here, is that Yasmin and I, we both have very proactive kind of models of living the life. And for us, the podcast, I guess, is also a little bit of a side job activity in the way to catch up with the market. Because as you said recently, it's a lot of work for data scientists in order to catch up with everything what is happening outside the world. And you can imagine that you've been doing, I don't know, hard thing with the Python or doing different models for 8 hours at least in a day in order to be okay with the project. And then on the top of that, after the work or on the weekends or like during your vacation, you have to go out and you still have to catch up with everything what has been going on in the world in this industry. And I guess for us, at least for me, in the first place, our podcast is also about that, because all the time what we're preparing for a new episode, it's an actual digging deeper activity into the data science industry.
Mm-hmm. And it's from Yasmin, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, so just to sum up, it's as much for our listeners as it is also for us to catch
for
up,
us,
right?
Yes.
And get into different topics again. So just win-win, I would say, hopefully, for everyone.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes you forget you actually have listeners when you publish this thing, because you do it also for yourself. Both.
Yeah, and that's why it's nice, right? So Kate and me, we're also really friends, and that's just time well spent all in all.
Yeah, it's like skin in the game, right? So you have this commitment and you need to talk, otherwise it's dead. So you have, otherwise, right? So you have this extra motivation to keep up and you need something to talk about, right? So you have some preparation, etc. Do you understand the listeners? Because I assume they give you feedback. Is that more BASF, or do you have some understanding there? It's like 50% are listening from outside BASF?
Yeah. So I think that is unfortunately not the level of detail to which I think Spotify and so on are going. And what I can say, it's country wise, it's very diverse, which we're super happy about. There is a big chunk coming from Germany, a bigger chunk also from the US. I think also I see Brazil already starting up. So Kate's evangelism is also already paying off in Brazil. No, but it's actually quite diverse. And I think part of it is also us being mentors for a long time with GDX. That we have, I think, listeners really around the world. And that's really nice. And I think what I can just say is I've been super happy to see that in terms of gender, you get some statistics also, right? That we had a pretty much balanced listeners in that area, which is super nice, because as you know, in the tech field or data science field, usually it's a more male dominated area. And I was super happy to see, for whatever reasons, that we also have a pretty balanced listenership.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So we are also quite balanced, but not 50-50. I think like 65-35 or something like that.
Yeah, it's also
to our listeners or the ones visiting our events. That's probably the ratio, which is still comparably good, I think, looking into other venues, right? Okay, nice.
Yeah.
And you're promoting on LinkedIn some pictures or videos, but you're not doing a video podcast, a vidcast. So it's a pure audio?
We do.
The whole thing? Yeah. Okay, because I was listening.
So I think we got into it because Riverside, which we're using for recording, is anyway also recording the videos. And then we said, hey, why not also in addition upload it on YouTube, for example? And I think in meanwhile, Spotify is also offering this video episode functionality. So by now we're just uploading the video to Spotify, to YouTube, and on Apple Podcasts mainly. It's reflecting the audio.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So on YouTube, we will find Diaries of a Data Scientist as well.
Yeah,
of course. Then we also put a link there as well, obviously.
Thank you.
Okay.
Amazing.
And what's coming up now with this podcast? What's the, regular having this...
10-year plan?
Now there's...
Not anymore.
Kate is in Brazil, right? And you will talk about this. What's coming up next? And in this, I'm sure you have some idea going forward with this podcast. Maybe you could
add some. Of course. So we do have, let's say, three ideas. One of them has not been shared yet with Yasmin, but I can tell this already right now. You would love it, believe me. So you would be really into this. The first one is definitely Brazil. And I guess this is really, really a massive opportunity for us and also for our listeners and viewers to a little bit dig deeper into this field in here. The second part is that I will be quite soon be one of the mentors in one of the universities in Singapore. And it was pretty interesting, I guess. I'm planning to have perhaps some information to be shared from this kind of mentorship, because this is kind of a different dimension as well for our listeners to understand what is happening in Singapore in there. And the third part that we're just kind of cooking up for our dear followers is that we really want to kind of set up the community right now. The community that is going to be in Discord. And we're planning to offer our, let's say, mentoring sessions in there. So it is going to be in the way that we, even with the podcast, even with everything that we're doing with Yasmin together, we just see that it's kind of not enough still for people to receive the information and to get their questions answered. And therefore, we kind of been thinking a lot about, okay, what else can be in there on the map? How else can we help instead of addressing this one-to-one or like LinkedIn or podcast? What else? So what else kind of bored pretty quickly, and this is going to be definitely a community. And we're planning to have maybe one time a week or like we can see mentoring sessions. Let's say nice. It's going to be a group mentoring for our members of this Discord channel on a different topics where they can come in there and ask anything they would love regarding the data science industry with different dimensions as universities, jobs, career, Python code, algorithms, whatever you would love to mention in this part.
Okay, nice. So very ambitious again to create something out of it, even like grow it in terms of creator economies, one of these buzzwords, right? Why Discord? Just out of curiosity, because yes, there are many Discord channels, but at the same time, I see many school communities popping up right now. Maybe you've seen it too. Why Discord? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like a Discord, and I've been using it personally a lot. I feel it really hits with the data science community, honestly. So, you know, I think it's well embedded in everyone who has been looking into technology. Even if you think just about how Midjourney started, right, as a kind of even as a business, right? You went to the Midjourney server on Discord and were creating images there. And I feel like it's just well beloved, and functionality wise, it gives you the certain freedom to make your own server, to offer your community there. And for us, it just really is a nice match with what your audience loves. Yeah. And maybe to add in addition, so as you also asked about feedback, and one recent change that we made was really also coming from the feedback is that we really have different content streams in what we're publishing, right? So some of the content is clearly really going to the experts, data scientists who are already working as a data scientist. Then we have the little bit more high level business level view on, for example, that was our generative AI summary we did a couple of episodes ago, or talking about imposter syndrome and more the soft skills side. So this is more the softer area. And then we have some content clearly more guiding career starters or someone who wants to break into data science, like things you have to watch out for in interviews or different roles in the data science community, right? And it was not really well visible to listeners about when they headed into an episode, what level is it? So that's something that we now color coded. So now we have different colors for the content streams.
Yeah.
And hopefully this helps people to more easily find the right content for them.
Okay. So you can, the ones you don't want to listen.
Exactly. Or maybe, you know, we also hope there's maybe some journey inside. So maybe you're starting as a business person and you're trying to think about getting into data science at some point. And at some point you end up being an expert if you want or not.
If you want to, okay. Wow. That's very interesting. Do we have a timeline here? So when you are starting this Discord channel?
Oh, really hard to tell, but I think sooner, rather sooner than later. So definitely still some coming this year, but we can't tell you right now if it's going to be 1 week or 1 month or so.
Mm-hmm. No pressure.
But it's got to be this year.
What is that, Kate?
What I just said that it's going to be definitely this year.
This year. Okay. That is the deadline, let's say, until
hopefully
the end of this year.
Well,
you will publish.
We'll say it gently, hopefully.
Okay.
If nothing major, you know, if the new AI model comes up, Bernard, then yes. we're all going to be super, super busy again. So we have to observe carefully what's going on.
Yeah, this Flux model, right, from Black Forest Labs, amazing, because there's like a huge German part of it, right?
Yes, but unfortunately, I've heard that it's not that much Black Forest anymore because there's already pretty much a majority of investors coming from the US who bought it or bought in.
And Reason Horowitz again with 30 million or so. Yeah.
Smart.
And,
yeah.
And the company is not based officially in Germany anymore. I've checked that too in their on the website. It's somewhere in California, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was so happy to see, you know, when I got into that topic during my master's into automated machine learning and auto ML, right? There was a major peak in Freiburg. There were a lot of researchers in that area making major contributions out of Freiburg, which was super cool to see because they were so close. And I feel like Germany, all in all, we have so bright minds and really also experts here. And sometimes I think it's really a little bit the lack of funding or maybe also a little bit the regulations and bureaucracy, which is maybe keeping Germany from really starting through an area of AI.
Yeah. And maybe we also have sort of a country-wide imposter syndrome or whatever it is, because we can actually be proud of many things and we need to talk about it. To really show things off on a big stage. That's actually, I think our shared mission actually is to make things visible, right? How strong folks and companies are already, right?
They're
not being too pessimistic. No, yes, you need to accept challenges and you need to be critical about some things, but at the same time, shed some light on things that are great and working well.
That's why we're very much excited for your next Data Unplugged event.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I hope you're joining.
Of course we are.
Yeah, but that
it is already planned.
That is not the way we should finish this podcast. I would like to give you the final words. And there is whatever you want, maybe something you're looking for in the next weeks or month, or in terms of you, Kate, I think we missed a bit talking about things you do, fun facts, let's say, when not thinking on doing data science. Maybe this is something you want to share with our listeners. Whatever you want, the last words belong to you. Yasmin, maybe can we start with you, Yasmin?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to, you know, have now this team around for Data and AI Academy and just do continue to do great things and bring even more visibility to the topic of AI at BSF. And yeah, just super excited. And at the same time, also, as you've heard, not a lot of new things coming from the podcast side. So it's very much data science for me related in the next month. So just very happy where I am right now in my life.
And maybe from my side, it's going to be not that professional one, but something that I'm trying to share through my, let's say, identity and personality is that, guys, we have only 100 years of life. Enjoy every second of it, every single day. And I would say everything that you're doing in your life, every action, every step you're taking should be part of your identity and should definitely have a purpose.
Wow, that's beautiful. Wow.
Thank you.
That was deep. Yes.
Wow. And by the way, Yasmin, you are visiting Kate, obviously, within like the next 6 months, right?
Yes, we've planned it out. I was like, Kate, do you have a second bed in your apartment?
Yes.
No, so I would love, I also have colleagues in Brazil, so it wouldn't be actually only a fun, but also I could... related back to some business activities, so would love to visit.
Okay. Mandatory visit, I assume. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much that we finally did this podcast. Thank you so much. It was fun.
Yeah. And
we learned so much.
Thank you, too.
Thank you so much for having us.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.